by one, though.
No, I didn't say. Okay, now let's do Zerik.
Zerik is 7, 2, 9 plus 3 is 12.
So Haman is 14 and Zeresh is 12.
26.
So he says 26. So that's what Haman said to Zeresh. Listen, you know, we're 26 and Mordechai and Esther are 26. 26, 26, you know. We're like they are. Zeresh said back, no, you're not like Mordechai. Because really, he's not.
Because he's 14.
Because he's 14 and Mordechai's 13. And I'm not like Esther. She's really not, because Esther is 13 and Zeresh is 12. Right? And he said, we belong to another side. Okay, let's see. This is the Yod Eichin. Samach Mem Aleph Lamed. Let's do the Gematria. Samach Mem Aleph Lamed. What's that?
Samach 6.
And the Gematria with no zeros.
14.
The same as?
Homer.
Yeah. And now let's try Lamed Yud, Lamed Yud Tav.
Three, four,
the name of a famous, seven. Terrible magazine. Yeah, go ahead.
Three, four, seven, eight, twelve.
Who is that?
Zeresh.
That was Zeresh, right?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What were those last 2 words?
Isn't that great? Well, the first one, the Samach Mel and Amal Flamed, is the name of, so to speak, the masculine side of the side of Tumah, the side of defilement and evil and so forth and so on. And Lamed Yud Tav is the name of the feminine side of the side of defilement and Tumah and evil. So she said to him, no, I'm not. You're not the same as Mordechai, and I'm the same as Esther. We really come from the other side, and it's quite true. Their numbers are identical to the other side. Yeah? Now, can you imagine Chazal reporting this in the Medrash, reporting this conversation? Right? He says we're the same as Esther and Mordechai, and she says no, you're not the same as Mordechai, and I'm not the same as Esther. We come from another side, or another place. This is, if you look at the numbers, of course, who told you to look at the numbers? Maybe it's spelled anything backwards. Maybe it's a place in the Parsha. Maybe it's who knows what, how old they lived, how long they lived. My son-in-law told me, that's how you do it. Terrific. Okay. Now, he told me something else, which really I thought was fabulous. What did Mordechai say to Esther? If you don't go in and plead with the king, some kind of salvation will come to the Jewish people from another place, and you and your whole house will die. The whole house of your father will die. It never occurred to me to ask, the house of her father, who would that be?
Mm-hmm.
Her father. In her father's house, where did she come from? She and Mordechai are first cousins. First cousins, you know. If the father's house is beyond, you know, the nuclear family, and she doesn't have a nuclear family because she has no children, right? Then, and her parents, their father is dead anyway, which her parents are dead, right? That's why she was an orphan, that's why he took her in. So, Beis Avich, your father's house, probably includes Mordechai as well. So, I mean, it never occurred to me that when he says to her, you and your father's house, you know, he's not pointing the finger at her because the finger comes right around back at him. Okay, well, pashut. And, the question is, why does he say that? Who told him that? Furthermore, there's a Medrash. The Medrash says, so this all comes from my son-in-law. Medrash says,
was he stoned when he said
home? Huh?
Was he stoned when he said home?
Holy cow.
It sounded pretty coherent to me.
Stoned would be
my
heart. No, you don't understand. So you're so out of it. You have a hat like that. Stoned means on drugs. It doesn't mean just drugs. You see, you're out of it. How do I survive with this hat and this beard for that? My friends here, they keep me current, you see? They keep me up to date. Okay. Yeah, be careful. Just going to go into Cuba, you know, that's another lingo. Okay. So then he said, the Medrash says like this, when the king said to Haman, go find Mordechai and put the clothes on him and put him on the horse that I, the royal horse, and lead him through the streets and proclaim, this is what will be done to the man the king wants to honor. When the king said this to Haman went to find Mordechai. Now, where was Mordechai? Beis Magdash learning, of course, where else would Mordechai be? And he saw Haman coming. I guess Haman wasn't coming alone, because the prime minister didn't travel alone. Mordechai said, he's coming to get me, he's coming to kill me. That's what he said, coming to kill me. Now, my son-in-law asks, if Mordechai just told Esther that the Jewish people are going to be saved, they're going to be saved, why is he afraid that he's going to be killed? He's certain of the salvation. So why does he think that when Haman's coming to get him, he's going to be killed, right? Well, we've answered that question already.
You're
why? Because he's part of her father's house. And he said to her, if you don't beg for the Jews, then you and your father's house are going to be destroyed. And he's part of the father's house. So it's all about destroying now makes some sense. But we don't understand why he says the Jews will be saved and you and your father's house will be killed. That is, my son-in-law explained as follows. We know that if God forbid there's an evil decree against the Jewish people, there are two ways to beat it. One way is to pray for mercy, and the other is, if we're not worthy of mercy, that God will take out the decree on the best of the people, the best of the congregation, and their deaths will be an atonement for the community as a whole. This happens many times. Mises tzadikim bechaper salador. The death of the righteous is an atonement for the generation. And if this bothers you a little bit, if you begin to hear bells in the background, you know, tummy bells, defiled bells, if this sounds to you a little bit like something that Christianity teaches, you should know two important things. Number one, Judaism is not anti-Christianity. That's not the title of Judaism. That's not its essence. We're not anti-Christianity, we're not anti-Islam, we're not anti-Hinduism, we're not anti-Buddhism. Judaism is what Judaism is. Torah is what it is. If it happens to agree with some other religion, that means that the other religion got something right. Could happen. It could happen, sort of by accident, you know, but it could happen. And we don't have to deny it, because, you know, somebody says, well, you know, Christians breathe, so shouldn't you really be considering? No. I mean, how come you're breathing if Christians breathe? Something dumb like that. So if they have an idea, and especially with respect to Christianity, if they got something right, it's probably because they took it from us. So Elama, they take it and they exaggerate it and they apply it in the wrong context and they take it out of beyond its normal boundaries and its normal conditions. Quite right. At any rate, so now we say that the death of the righteous can protect the generation in this world from the calamity in this world. But we definitely do not say that the righteous can protect someone from his own individual accounting in the world to come, where action by action he has to be paid off. And we definitely say not. And that's where they took it too far. One second. So now, what did he say to her? There are two ways to beat an evil decree. One is by prayer, and the other is by the midas hadin, the attribute of justice, taking it out on the best people in the generation. Now, who are the outstanding people in the generation? You and your father's house. You being the one who is, she's really a prophet, and she's chosen to be queen, and he's the head of Sanhedrin. So you see that this family has in it all of the hands, the reins of leadership. So this family could be the ones who will be chosen to be the sacrifice to protect the whole generation against the decree. Especially, my son-in-law said, since they are descendants of Saul, King Saul. All
right.
The descendants of King Saul. What did I say at the beginning of the Megillah? Why does it give Mordechai's lineage back? Ishimini, that he comes from Benjamin.
Oh,
and the genealogy of Haman goes back to Agag, the Amalekite, because this is an old battle. This is not a new thing going on. It's an old battle. Now, said my son-in-law, if you're looking not only for the best people in the generation, but the people in the generation who might be relevant to be hit because of the current crisis, you might look at the descendants of Saul. Because it was his failure to kill Agag that led to the continuation of the Amalekites in the first place. So not only are Esther and Mordechai the leaders of the generation and the best of the generation, but they are the descendants of the person whose failure centuries before led to the present problem. So he says to her, look, there are two ways to beat this decree. One is by prayer, and the other is by the attribute of justice, taking a sacrifice from the generation. If you don't go in and daven, if you don't go in and pray, then we are thrown back on the other alternative. Who would be the relevant sacrifice to be taken from the generation and to protect the rest of the generation? It's going to be you and me. You and your father's house, which includes me and who knows whoever else. That's why I say to her that if you don't go in to pray, you're not going to use the option of prayer, then the attribute of justice will exercise the other option. And the other option is going to be somebody's got to be a carbon, and the
But how does my Shalom get a kafara and get closer to God if I didn't have any, I deserve death if a tzaddik, if a big tzaddik does?
What did I say? You're so busy thinking of the question. I don't know what questions after they have to put them also. what did I say? I said that the death of the tzaddik can do what?
I'll avoid maintenance.
Can only avert a disaster in this world.
But why would a disaster come in this world for?
Because of the failures of the people and the generation.
So how does my failures get anything helped out? What if I see this?
You understand? You put the question in the wrong way.
I know, but I was trying to bring up based on this. Well, what this see this is my problem with punishments to give. Well, let me give mother a second for a second. But what I'm trying to say is that the only two reasons why punishments are given, right? Just for a kapara, or so that you get reminded to do the right thing, now, right? Now, under which thing does a big tzaddik come under the category?
Go a step back. Ask yourself, why is there a decree against the generation?
Because tzaddikim were not helping us.
Oh, good. He's terrific. He really took a whole flying leap forward. That's even farther than I wanted to go. But you're right. He tracks the logic all the way to the end and said, if they can save it, and the decree is there, it means they're not saving him. Very good. That's a lovely thought. Now, I want to go like three steps before that. That was really sharp. Yeah, I want let's go back a step before that. The decree means that these people don't deserve to be given any more chances to try to improve themselves. That's what it means. After all, let's back up another step. A person lives for a certain amount of time. No one's going to live forever. Everyone's going to die sooner or later, right? Death means your chances are up. Barring Gilgul now, that's another possibility. But this stretch of life, your chances are up to do mitzvot, to do tshuva, to try to improve yourself. Everybody has a certain limited amount of time, and after that time, this shot is up.
So
now, when there's a decree of death, what God is saying is, for whatever reasons, this person's time is up. He's not getting any more time to do. For individually, it could be because he's done everything he needs to do. So therefore, he doesn't need any more time. There are all sorts of reasons why people die. If it's a decree on a whole generation, so then there have to be people there who have things yet to do, and their lives are not finished, and they have things to prepare. God says, no, you don't deserve any more time. Now, it may be that you don't deserve any more time, but it may be that God has to give it for other reasons, like, for example, promises he made to the patriarchs. Or other considerations. Yes, you don't deserve it, but there could be other ways to change the decision without deserving it. Right? Now, we went through this upstairs, and I went down maybe even downstairs a couple of times. Where do we have this over and over again? When God says to Moses, I'm going to wipe out the whole generation, right? It's the whole generation. And Moses says, after a certain argument, and God says, okay, I won't wipe them out. So what do I mean? It means that without prayer, this is the decree. With prayer, that's the decree, right? Depends upon the prayer. The prayer changes the conditions to which the decree applies. Who's going to pray? Not just anybody, and usually not the guilty parties, because maybe they don't deserve to have their prayer heard. But the great people, the righteous people, if they pray, then that could mean that the conditions are changed and the decree will apply that way.
Right.
Okay, so now he says to her, you could pray and avert the decree. Now you can put in what he said. And if you don't pray, You could have done it through prayer, and you didn't do it through prayer. You could have saved them, and you didn't save them. No, so then, in that respect, in other words, you're the key. You're the key. You could do it one way or the other. It really proves what my son-in-law said in a way. You're the key one way or the other. Now, you could choose. That's probably what he meant. I'm thinking about it. You're the key one way or the other. And if you don't choose to do it this way, then it's going to be done that way because you are the key. In other words, they've used up their merit. They don't have any more merit to rely on. They've used it up. But you still have merit. You still have merit. Yeah.
Why, when Mordechai was saying it to Esther, why was she before him? Why was she greater than him? So you and your father's house, what, he was a tzaddik. The tzaddik goes before, the tzaddik is the highest one of the generation. The highest nivu is the tzaddik's nivu, and then the girl's nivu, right?
That's a problem.
He said you and your family, it should have been, he's going to go first. Mordechai was going to go first, before Esther.
Yeah, understand, he's telling her to go into the king and plead for the people. He can't do that.
But he should have said that because I'm going to go, because Mordechai was going to die first before it.
No, I don't think so. First of all, there's no reason to think that a male tzaddik is always superior to a female tzaddikus. There's no reason to think that. Sarah was in many respects superior to Abraham. She was superior in the Buddha to Abraham. The pre-tzaddik says she was superior in Sitka to Abraham. So I don't think you have to make such an assumption. She is an Aviya. He, I don't think, is another. So in that respect,
Esther was an Aviya.
Yeah, she's one of the seven Aviyas.
Although she was going to go before.
So I don't know who's going to go before, but he's saying to her, you have to go in, and if not, then we, the collectivity of people who are standing in this position, we're going to be in serious trouble. Yeah.
Isn't there times that women could do more than a man could do? Like, for the Jews, like, on the
job? Yeah, Devorah was a shofetis. Devorah was a judge for 40 years. At that time, no man could do it. Indeed, it's back over there. It's very poignant. There has to be a war with Sisera. Her husband is the commander of the armed forces. She says to him, go and raise an army and fight the battle. I'm a prophet. I'm a judge. I'm the one who makes the political decisions. You're a military man. Your job is to fight the battle. And he says, I'm not going without you. She says, okay, I'll go, but you're losing out now because since you refuse to go without me, you will not deliver the coup de grace, as our enemies, the French, would say. I can't even call them friends as a joke anymore. How corrupt they are. Did you hear what they said yesterday?
Yes, sir.
They said, if Iraq will use non-conventional weapons, then we will join the war against them. The French. Do you understand? They've been left out now. So it suddenly occurred to them that this war is going to go on without them. And they're not going to have any part in it. So how are they going to cover their interests? So now they've dreamed up a way to get back in through the back door. But if we'll use that, then we'll go again. They're so corrupt. It's disgusting. I wouldn't want to be in the same room with them.
They want a piece of the pie.
That's right. They want a piece of the pie. They don't care. He said a week ago, you know why I'm opposing the war? Because I have pity on the American boys who are going to die. The American president doesn't care. And the American Congress doesn't care. He cares more about the American boys who are going to die than the American... You know, it's just disgusting. It's disgusting that a human being behave like that. You know, pigs look better than me.
I think we should do president.
Anyway.
You know the world is going crazy when the best rapper is white, the best golfer is black, and Germany doesn't want to go to war.
That's very good. I just hope the tape didn't get it. Okay, so there's another aspect here that I maybe will help him a little bit.
I'm very confused in this area. I'm very confused in this area.
Okay, that's okay. That's good. That's a first step. You know, everybody else thinks they know. They're completely lost, as Socrates would say. If you know you're confused, you're a big step ahead. There is an aspect in which the Jewish people functions as a unit. There are many aspects in which the Jewish people functions as a unit. Let me give you some examples, just to give you some feeling for this idea. 3,311 years ago, or 12 years ago, whatever it is exactly, Jews stood at Sinai. God said, do you want the Torah? I said, yes. Nasa v'nishma. We agree. We take it. And they made a covenant. Covenant means a two-sided agreement with God. What has that got to do with me? The fact that my great, 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 to the nth power, grandmothers and grandfathers, stood there and said yes, what has that got to do with me? After all, if my father worked for IBM and signed a contract, a life contract with IBM, would I have to work for IBM? Certainly not. What agreements or commitments my father makes has nothing to do with me. Each person has to live his own life and make his own. We're not living under a feudal system where, you know, if a father signs on to be a serf of a certain lord, all his children forever are serfs of such a lord. We don't believe in such systems. So how can their agreements have any relevance to me? How can it bind me? How can it commit me or obligate me?
Your neshama was there, right?
Okay. I think it's true. The Medrash and the Zohar talk about that, but I don't think that will help. Because for me to be held to a commitment, I have to make a free choice. And a neshama without a guf, without a body, can't make any free choices. It's there because it's supposed to be sort of relevant spiritually. But I'm talking morally now. Why am I bound by their agreement? Now, we do have a model for this. We do have a model for this. The United States negotiates treaties with foreign countries. Imagine a treaty the United States negotiated with Mexico in 1892. It's on the books. Negotiated in 1892. I wasn't alive then. I didn't vote for the Congress that said yes. I didn't vote for or against the president who said yes. Why am I bound by a treaty that was signed by the United States in 1892, or a law passed in 1892? Or the Constitution of the United States, which is ratified by the individual colonies, 250 years ago. What's it got to do with me? The answer is that a country, a nation is a single thing. And the nation remains the same nation, even though the people are changing all the time. People are dying, new people are being born. And after 150 years, 200 years, there's nobody left from the original people. But the nation is still the same nation. A nation can go on even though the individual people change. Same thing is true with corporations. GM, General Motors, signed a contract with Nigeria to supply them with Jeeps for 25 years. Now imagine, you know, as time goes on, the board of directors of GM, some people died, some people resigned, they're replaced by other people. Shares of stock are traded on Wall Street, and shares of stock are bought and sold. Imagine 17 years later, there isn't a single person on the board of directors who was there when the contract was signed. And all the shares have changed hands, so the entire stockholdership, all the people owning stocks are entirely different from all the people who owned stocks 17 years before. Can GM now say, I'm not bound by this contract because we didn't negotiate it. We weren't here. It wasn't us. We didn't vote on it. We didn't own it. So we're not bound by it. They cannot say that because it's the same company. Same company, even though the individual people who own the company or run the company have been replaced, it's the same company. There's an idea of a group with a group identity, a group name, that goes through time, even through the individual people change in time. That's what you have here since when the people stood at Sinai and they said yes to the Kodesh Baruch Hu. They didn't say yes as individuals. It wasn't 3 million individuals. Each person said yes for himself. It was those 3 million individuals who were then the nation, the Jewish nation at that time, making a treaty, a national treaty with God, which then binds both sides. Even when new people come into the world, God is bound by his commitment to the people, and the people are bound by the commitment to God, even 3,000 years later. Yeah.
I don't like that where you're the GM, because when a new person signed on GM, he took that under his when he signed up to work for GM, he understood that was there, but someone born in Jewish, he didn't take any, he was just born to it. It's like he didn't sign anything and say, I want to be part of it. The GM, that person, you know, he is new, and he wasn't there in the beginning, he signed on and a new stockholder.
What about a person born in America?
Yeah.
Person's born in America.
Yeah.
He's born an American. Nobody asked him. He's born an American citizen. He's made an American citizen without being asked.
But he could say, I don't want to be. He could take it away.
Good. Now let's suppose that he decides Sunday morning. Sunday morning, 9 a.m. I've had it. I'm tired of being an American. I like being an American. It's terrible. I'd rather be stateless. You know, just sail the seas and you know, or fly in the air. And, no, that's not over anybody's airspace. I don't want to be an American. What can he do? He's got to wait till Monday morning until the courts open. There ain't nothing he can do on Sunday. He's stuck. He's an American until Monday morning because that's the rules of citizenship. Now, there are certain countries that have the following type of rules. You were educated in the state-run education systems. That means taxes paid for your education. You want to renounce the responsibilities of citizenship? Pay back all the benefits that you got. So they present you with a bill. Right? And until you pay the bill, you can't renounce citizenship. And they will take your taxes against your will, and if you try to escape, they'll put you in jail because you owe the society for which you took all those benefits. So in many countries, the idea of renouncing citizenship is just not open. It's not open. And then you are a citizen, even against your will. Yeah.
Okay, if I leave, let's say, come to Israel, and just, I have a dual citizenship, I let my passport expire, I never go back to America. I'm not bailed anymore.
Of course you are. If you earn money here and it's taxable in the United States, they'll take you back and make you pay taxes. You're an American citizen in all respects. Your passport has nothing to do with being an American citizen. There are many American citizens who don't have passports. They just can't travel out of the country. That doesn't make you not an American citizen. It's kind of silly to get an American passport. Sell it. It's worth $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. Understand? Because then someone can impersonate an American. He can get into America easily, right? So he certainly wouldn't throw it away. He just, come on, let's be practical.
Let's be Jewish.
You guys are here today. Not plugged into the real world. Over here. Yeah. Okay, for the tape, I'm not suggesting this. I don't mean this. I'm not recommending this. I know it's easy. But I'm not recommending that people break American law, God forbid. You know, okay, see, got me? So they have to pour. So they have to pay. They have to get a little leeway here. We say Tachlin, Aval Anachnu Vavoseinu Chatanu, but we and our ancestors have sinned. Now, I understand why I confess. I confess because that's part of my tshuva. Tshuva requires me to say to God that I have failed in various ways. What business do I have confessing my ancestors' sins? What's that relevant to? So it's a very interesting thing. If you have a chattis is a sin offering, and the person who set it aside to be used for his sin dies, so it can't be used. It can't be used for anything. It's totally rejected. What happens if you have a chattis offering of the congregation? National chattis offerings, like on Rosh Chodesh or on holidays. And let's suppose it's set aside to be used on Rosh Chodesh, and then it gets lost. So you can take another one, and you offer it, and then you find it. So the rule is that you can use it the next Rosh Chodesh. But by the time you get to the next Rosh Chodesh, some people in the original group have died. If this chattis is to represent a community of people, and we have a rule that if the owner of a chattis dies, the chattis can't be used. Well, if it's for a community of people and some of the people have died, how can you continue to use it? So we have a rule, ein sibur meis. The community doesn't die. There's no such thing as the death of the community. The tzibur has a separate identity. This sacrifice is the sacrifice of the community. Community is not just a set of people, because if it's a set of people, then some have died. You haven't got the same set anymore. But no, the community is something like a nation, and the nation goes on through time, and going on through time means that it's the same nation, even though some people have been replaced. Let me give you a couple more examples, just to give you a feeling for the idea in general. And then I'll apply it here, and then I'll take your questions. Um, we say that there are 613 commandments, and each commandment has an effect on a person, a spiritual effect on a person, and you need 613. So there are two problems here. Number one is, there's no human being to whom all 613 apply. Some are for men, and some are for women, and some are for Kohanim, and some are for Levim, and some are for the rest of the Hedron, and the king, and all different kinds of people. So that every person needs 613, and no one has 613 that apply to him. How does anybody get the 613 that he needs? So one standard answer is that what any one Jew does becomes available to all other Jews. It's not done for you yourself alone. It's not just you doing it. You do it as a part of this larger group, and therefore what you do can have an effect for this whole group. And not only at one time, but through time also.
In logic, how does that go?
Through time also. So the fact that 2,000 years ago the temple was standing and the Kohanim were offering the sacrifices means that whatever the sacrifices do becomes available to people at later times. A little bit like this. I have some scars that I... should see what happened to the other guys. But anyway, I have some scars that I got years ago for various things that happened. One from an operation, others from other things.
Really?
And, no, I'm joking. I'm just joking. It's after Purim, right? Now, you should know that the material out of which your body is made is being replaced constantly. Okay, if there's a biologist listening to the tape, I too know that certain types of cells, nerve cells, are typically not replaced, although some of them are replaced. We've discovered that now. But the material in the cells themselves, the atoms, the molecules, are being replaced all the time. The material in your body today is totally different from the material that was there 10 years ago. But the shape of the scar is still there. When the body rebuilds itself, when the body replaces its material, it replaces it in the same form, almost, I wouldn't say exactly, but almost the same form as before, so that you can look at a place in your body 30 years later and say, that's a scar I got there when I was a teenager and I fell off the bike. Similarly, if at a certain stage in time, the Jewish people does mitzvos, that leaves an impression. It leaves an impression on the people as a whole. And then when old individual human beings die and are replaced by other individual human beings, that character of impact on the nation as a whole is preserved. You're talking about, so why do we say we and our ancestors? Because true individually, I'm not the same as those people, but collectively, we standing today are able to affect a rectification, a tikkun, some kind of improvement for the nation as it was before, because the nation has to repent for the things that it has done wrong, and we are the present stage of the same nation. So you have to think in terms of the community as a separate entity, because what I have is entity, thing by itself, which continues to exist through time. Now,
how far does that go?
We have, this is the final step now, we have a statement that certain types of calamity, certain things that happen to people, are in some way equivalent to death. Blind person, says the Gemara, we spoke about this upstairs, blind person loses his ability to do chesed, and therefore he's not fully alive, because life is for the sake of chesed. So, Chazal tell us that the head of Sanhedrin, the great tzaddikim, are the Einei Ha'edah, that the eyes of the congregation. And if God takes the eyes of the congregation, then the congregation is regarded as having died, in this abstract sort of philosophical sense. And then if there's a decree of death on the congregation, Rahman al-Islam, it can be paid off by taking the eyes of the congregation. Because then, in that sense, the congregation is regarded as not fully alive. So here's that kind of background. This is what's called metaphysics. I got a background. Once you understand that the Jewish community is a single entity, it's a single thing, a single individual, it goes down through time, and people play parts in this individual. So if you can have an effect on the whole by operating on a part, just like it's true with anybody's body, you know. If you operate on a part, it has a tremendous effect on the whole body. So here also you can have an effect on the whole by operating in a park. And if it's a crisis situation where you have a decree against the whole congregation, then it can be carried out symbolically, I would say, enough to satisfy the attribute of justice if you take the very best. And in that way, it has an effect on the whole, an effect which, in a certain legal sense, is equivalent to death. That's enough. It doesn't have to be done where everybody actually dies out. This is what Mordechai said to Esther. There are two ways, prayer or the best being taken off. And we are probably the ones who are in that category. So therefore, either you go into to Ahasuerus and pray for us, for the Jewish people, or you and your house, including me, are going to be lost. Okay. Okay.
How far does the 613 mitzvahs thing go? Because like, I could be sitting here and never done a mitzvah, and I'm like doing like all the mitzvahs. I could never go in.
Yeah. So the answer is like this.
When we have like
the answer is like this. It's like there's a collective bloodstream. You know, a collective bloodstream. Say your spleen. Your spleen puts something into the blood. That goes to your foot, and it goes to your eyes, and it goes to your hair, it goes to your muscles, it goes to your heart. Why? Because they're all connected by the same bloodstream. But suppose somebody puts a clamp on the bloodstream. Where the blood vessel comes to him, he takes a clip, and he clips the bloodstream. No, if he clips it, so then he's not connected. A person can disconnect himself. Indeed, kores, you've heard of kores. Kores means being cut off from God. It's said 30-some-odd times in the Torah. All but once, it says that the soul is cut off from its people. Only once it says being cut off from God. All the other times it's been cut off from its people. Because if you're cut off from your people, you are cut off from God. You're cut off from that bloodstream. God relates to the whole of the Jewish people, and they cut off from that, they cut off from everything. So it's not automatic. It's not automatic. You have to want to be included. You want to be connected.
And Goyim will only have opportunity to reach 65 mitzvahs, let's say, right?
That's right. So there's no collectivity there, because this really depends upon the identity of a nation. They don't have any nations.
So if they fulfill their potential, could they fulfill as much as our potential?
Now we're going too far off this. This does not have anything to do with the world. This is a question. Okay. Everybody with me, what I said about Esther and about the collective nation? Okay.